This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and today I'm joined by the very talented author, Heidi Shertok. Heidi's the author of An Orthodox Love, a critically acclaimed debut novel praised by Kirkus Reviews, Publishers Weekly, and Library Journal. And today she's here with her hot-off-the-press second novel, Match Me If You Can. Her books are published internationally by U.S. and U.K., based publisher with a distribution all across the UK and Commonwealth, including a Portuguese language edition abroad. She is a contributor to the USA Today best-selling anthology On Being Jewish Now, and her essays and stories have appeared in Kveller, Hadassah Magazine, The Good Men Project, Medium, and TC Jewfolk. In addition to her writing, Heidi serves as head of community engagement and partnerships at Jewish Joy, where she helps build strategic collaborations and plays a leadership role in organizing Jewish JoyCon, the organization's inaugural event celebrating Jewish creativity, storytelling, and community. An experienced speaker and panelist, Heidi regularly appears at literary festivals, book events, podcasts, and community conversations. She has participated in Jewish Book Council programming, including the panel, The Importance of Writing Jewish Identity for Wide Reader Audiences. She's also passionate about mentoring writers and advocating for broader, more joyful representations of Jewish life in publishing. Heidi, welcome to Finding Your Bliss. Great to have you here.
Thank you so much, Judy, for having me. I'm a huge fan of your show, so this is really special to be here as a guest.
Thank you so much. Heidi, I have to congratulate you on your wonderful new book, Match Me If You Can. I wrote these notes. It's such a page turner. It's so compelling. It's heartfelt. It's funny. I didn't expect how funny it would be. It's really hilarious. And just for the listeners who haven't read it yet, let me just say that Match Me If You Can is a romantic comedy focused on Ashira Wernick, an Orthodox Jewish matchmaker who is trying to save her mother's business by matching the gorgeous, tall, dark, and handsome bachelor of the decade, Caleb Kahn, who is her brother's best friend. The story is full of lots of humor and lots of romantic tension knit into the piece. And you're really just dying this whole book, all 400 pages of it, for this couple to get together. This is sort of a friends to lovers, slow burn romance, again, with lots of humor. And it also spends a lot of time describing what's involved in being an Orthodox Jew and how important the role of the matchmaker is in this very religious sect of Judaism. All of this to say, Heidi, is that I really loved your book. And I'm wondering if you could tell us more about your brainchild and what inspired you to write it.
That is such a great question. I think, first of all, being an Orthodox Jew, being born into this community, having a matchmaker when you're about 19 is just something that's totally normal. You start dating for marriage when you're about that age after you've completed seminary. And it's just something so integral in our community. And so I guess I just thought, let me write something about a woman who is a matchmaker and who at the same time has decided that because of her complex grief, because of everything she's gone through with her childhood, she's decided love is not for me. I can't have love because for whatever reason, I push people away. But at the same time, this is something that she and her since deceased mom had built together as a business. And so she wants to keep that, honor her legacy with continuing matchmaking company that they built together.
The story is so authentic, and it's all of those things. And it's also that her father left her, the character's father, Ashira's father, left her. And so I think she has a fear of that abandonment happening to her again. In fact, later on in the book, she has a possibility of dating someone who's all of the things, but she knows that she would never really love him. And that seems safer somehow. Anything is safer than finding the person that's actually going to be someone she loves that could hurt her and abandon her the way her father did. So it's very multi-layered, and it's a very complex character, and which makes the character so three-dimensional and so amazing. Did you have a matchmaker in your life?
Oh, 100%. I had a couple, and unfortunately, it seemed like they were paying attention when I was telling them what I was looking for. And yet, when it came time for me to meet these potential candidates, they were all 100% of what I wasn't looking for.
There's resumes. Like, this is not, for people who don't understand, this is very serious. It's not just the way you would go to like Hinge or J-Date. This is an actual, a very, very serious process. What is involved in a resume when you're presenting who you are to the matchmaker?
You need references, first of all. You need letter of recommendation from the rabbi of your community, the principal of your high school, and also of your seminary, and the numbers, because of course, the parents of the potential person you're going to marry is going to want to call all of these people. Oh, you need friends. It's just basically a lot of references and everything yes. you're looking for. And I know as a reference, my job is just to make this person sound good because nobody is perfect.
So how did you dream up the part of this dashing hero, Caleb? Because I really did from the very beginning think Bridgerton right? vibes, right? Like it was right? just this gorgeous, dashing, kind, menschy, handsome, all the things, intelligent, successful, like everything you could ever want and more sensitive.
Yeah. So originally, this is pre-October 7th, I had just had him be this Ashkenazi classic Jewish guy. And then after October 7th happened and I saw all over the news, there's so much misinformation spreading out there. I had a platform to educate people. And mm-hmm. so I thought, here's a perfect opportunity where I could take the hero and make him be this son of an Ethiopian Israeli. And it kind of was born out of a need to educate people, as well as I found it very therapeutic at the same mm-hmm. time.
It begs to become a movie. Like I can just see a movie or a series, like a mini series. There's so much play within the play because the Netflix series with two of the characters, we'll talk about that as well. I also love the character Mrs. Schwartz through her power and influence when Ashira fails to match Mrs. Schwartz, this character's, one of her daughters with Caleb. Mrs. Schwartz enacts a revenge plot against Ashira, trying to bring her down. And I loved your Jewish concept without giving it away of how things end with Mrs. Schwartz, even after all that she's done to Ashira. Without giving it away, can you speak to the character of Mrs. Schwartz? Also a great character for a movie or a series.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes. So the first time I wrote Mrs. Schwartz, I didn't have the end where basically she got her comeuppance. And a friend of mine read the draft and she said, I would like for her to suffer. And so I thought about that and I'm like, yeah, I hear that because you want that feeling of justice, I suppose. I think that's a natural human want. And so I wrote it, but then I still felt like I wanted to leave the reader still feeling like there's hope. I didn't want to leave her suffering. I felt bad yes. almost. Yes. So I thought it would be nicer to have her suffer, but then at the same time, also give her that opportunity to recognize her wrongs and to ask for forgiveness. Because I think for Mrs. Schwartz, for herself, that is actually what was necessary for her to improve as a person.
Yes, absolutely. And also, I just wanted to ask you about the whole idea that your characters are so diverse in your storytelling. Like, I love that you write characters that are part of the LGBTQIA plus community and Jews of color, as we've mentioned. Caleb, was that a conscious decision? Or do you have friends in the community that you based some of these characters on?
Yeah, it's a great question. When I was in high school, it's called a Beis Yaakov, which is like a very ultra Orthodox all girls yes. high school. And we had a science teacher who was a Black convert, Orthodox Jewish woman. And she was very open with us. She said, girls, ask me anything. She had experienced lots of racism just in general society, but then again, within the Orthodox community. And we're still friends to this day. And her stories and her children's experiences really had a huge impact on me. And along the way, I met other Jews of color and I heard their stories. So I guess I felt a need, I think as all authors, as all writers, we have a responsibility to write as we see society. Mm-hmm. And as Rochelle Weinstein, who's an amazing author, once said, she also said, we should write as we see society, but at the same time, write as we wish society to be.
Yes, the utopian society that we wish the world could be more accepting and all of us loving each other. And that really does come through very, very much. I also love the subplot of Bernice and Lenny and the Netflix series that becomes a hit and how Ashira triumphs over all adversity by being resilient. She just is so positive and feisty and optimistic, which is one of the things that Caleb falls in love with, of course. Is there a lot of Heidi in Ashira?
You know, I wish. I feel like all of my characters come to me very determined, fully developed, and I have no choice but to just go with it. I think there's a little bit of Ashira in me, though. I think I've had some complex grief. I think we've all had a little bit of, I mean, you can't go through life without experiencing some grief. Yes. And just, you know, as a Jew, as a people, we've had to go through so much. We've got that epigenetics, first of all. So we're already kind of born with trauma in our DNA. Yeah. And then just life, it's hard. So I think while I didn't go through, thank God, what Ashira went through with her mom and her dad, I definitely experienced my own sense of grief and having to work through that in order to overcome things and try to choose happiness each and every day.
When did you know you were a writer?
I think I knew I was a writer when I was 12 years old and my mom bought me this little journal from Barnes & Noble and I wrote a story, like a kind of a mystery thriller type story.
Wow.
And then I ended up killing everybody at the end.
Oh, no. Goodness gracious.
I literally cried. And then I'm like, I guess there won't be a sequel.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Were you a reader, Heidi, always? Like from the time, I'm thinking on Shabbat, perfect time to read, right?
I was always a reader. And I was always more prone to illnesses, unfortunately. I've had some autoimmune issues. I was almost diagnosed with lupus. So I was sick a lot. And I had to go to the hospital. And books were a huge escape for me.
I love the work that you're doing. Can you tell us more about your childhood and how growing up in a small town Orthodox Jewish community really helped shape your storytelling? Because you're getting such, there's not a lot of popular authors in the Orthodox community. So I really feel like you're breaking new ground in a wonderful way.
Yeah, I totally never thought I would make it as a writer at all. But yeah, I was really lucky. I got interest the first round. I did my queries and my agents actually said to me, we've never seen a story where Orthodox Jewish people look normal. And I was just so blown away by that. I'm like, what do you mean? We're people too. And I think growing up in this almost a small bubble in a Orthodox Jewish community in a small town, I started off going to a cheder where we had to teach everything, which means we would like read the Bible or the Chumash from Hebrew to Yiddish to English. Around me, there were tons of non-Jewish people. And because my mother was a little bit more modern than my dad, we were allowed secular books and TV and movies. And wow. So I always felt, though, like I was almost straddling two worlds and I didn't quite fit in to wow. either one, which is kind of a lonely feeling. And I think that's a lot of what Caleb felt, like he didn't quite fit in yes. either world.
That's so fascinating. All right. We have to talk about the romantic and I'm going to say sexual tension between the characters. I know you've been asked this, Caleb and Ashira. And I have to ask you, having very close relatives in the Orthodox world, I was surprised by the love scene in the last 10 pages of the book. And I've read in the research that you did experience some backlash for writing that love scene. But I'm wondering, how did it come to be? Was it just sort of the characters took on a life of their own and that's what happened? But that scene is a little bit graphic and I was surprised by it. So first of all, where did it come from? And as you were writing it, did you go, how do I include this? Okay, tell us your thought process.
Yeah. Well, there were a few things that came into play with that. One of them is that I'm a bit of a rebel. So when people tell me I can't do something, it makes me want to do it. And with my first book, Unorthodox Love, I wanted to do a steamy scene like that. And my agents and my editor said, no, you have to follow your Torah. Like these are Orthodox Jewish people.
Right.
And I felt like, first of all, I grew up with all of these rules, and now even my characters have to follow these rules. Right. So I was a little, like, I was about to say a bad word. No, I was a little annoyed. So when it came time to my next book, I just said, you know what? I'm going to write the scene, and if they don't like it, fine. They're the ones ultimately who are in charge and have control, but I'm going to write it. And they were fine with it. They liked it. So.
Yeah.
And I feel like the characters just wanted it so much.
Yes. So. Now, there's something for people who are listening who aren't as familiar with the Orthodox world. There is something when an Orthodox couple comes together that they're supposed to be Shomer Nagia. No matter what they've done in the past, typically a year before their marriage, their wedding, right? They're going to become Shomer Nagia, which means they cannot for sure have any kind of relations. They can't cuddle and they can't even hold hands or touch in any way. So what was the backlash that I'm sure you received from the Orthodox community, knowing this Shomer Nagia rule and the fact that these characters just go for it?
I really think that in my own community in Minneapolis, they've kind of given up hope on me. They're like, well, that's Chaiki. That's what they call me. That's my Yiddish name. That's Chaiki. What can you do? You know,
right.
But they're very sweet and kind. But I guess I've been getting emails from people that I don't know. And some of them have been a little bit angry. And they're like, look, I was about to buy like 5 copies of your new book to send to my daughter and all of her seminary friends. And now I can't. And I'm like, sorry, this is a romance. This is not a halakha book talking about Jewish law. My characters are 3-dimensional. And I do feel like there's a double standard when it comes to Orthodox Jews. And when I write characters as I see people, and people have flaws. So sorry.
Right, right. And I think, as you say, it was an organic thing that this is what the characters ended up doing. And it's so believable, but it's okay in the end because they end up doing things in a very Balabatish way for the rest of their journey and their life together. So it sort of makes up for that. Do you also find, because your approach to these characters and to this world is more free and more expansive, that you're able to reach a wider audience, meaning that this book is really not just for the Orthodox community. It's not just for the Jewish community. It's for anybody. It's a love story.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, when we were in the acquisitions process for my debut book, Unorthodox Love, HarperCollins said it's a little too niche for us. It is like almost a niche within a niche. But ultimately, when I work and when I write and when I spoke with my agents and editors about it, I said, ultimately, it is a love story that anybody should be able to get behind. But the background is Orthodox Judaism. But ultimately, it's a love story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very much so. How do you think humor and romance can build bridges between communities? You've done that very expertly and exquisitely in this book.
I love that question. I think I've always been really into psychology, and I think that both humor and romance, it sort of activates, I would say, the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the opposite to the fight or flight system. And I think when you're in that mode, your defenses are lowered and you're not thinking about how to respond back to somebody or what your next argument is going to be. It's just you're listening to the person 100% and you're in their world, and it makes you understand what this person is going through. And I think that is entirely the reason why romance and humor has that ability.
And you weave the two together so beautifully. It's incredible. So you've also gone through a lot. And first of all, I want to say I'm so glad that you're well now. I know that in the last couple of years, you have battled and survived breast cancer. Can you tell us more about what that was like to write this book while battling breast cancer? I can't even get over that.
Yeah, not only that, a lot of people don't know this part, but I was 40 years old. But the same year I was diagnosed with breast cancer, they also found a large polyp when they did a colonoscopy of mine, which they said was a very rare, fast-growing type that would have actually killed me by the time I was 45 to 47.
Oh, boy.
I mean, I was always a bit of a sick kid. So the fact that I even made it to 40 and had three kids was an amazing accomplishment. Wow. And then suddenly, though, I was faced with this mortality. My father's a doctor. And so if he hadn't said to me, just go get checked out, right, I don't think I'd be here right now. Wow. And at the same time, I had a contract. I had deadlines. I was supposed to be writing this romantic comedy. And I wasn't feeling particularly funny. And so I was turning in drafts where they're like, it's kind of depressing. And I'm like, yeah, you hate. And then what really broke me, though, was October 7th. Yeah. So it all happened in that same year. And October, I just flipped. I'm like, I can't. Mm-hmm. But I actually found that Match Me If You Can was such therapy for me.
I want to talk about October 7th because I equally felt its impact as Jews all over the world have, and many Christians. There's a lot of good people out there who I think also have compassion for what happened to our people. But I will say, I'm curious about what your writing process looked like, especially when you were sick. What did that look like for you?
So a lot of it took place in my bed, where I wasn't even allowed to move my arms after my double mastectomy and then the reconstructive surgery. Mm-hmm. So my writing process really was whenever I had the energy. And it wasn't a lot, to be honest. Yeah. So it was hard. It was hard.
Was it something you looked forward to, though? Because I almost feel like it might have been a bit of a diversion for you, right? A distraction from October 7th and from your illness, that you could just delve into these characters and lose yourself in these characters, as it were.
I think there were days when I did lose myself when the writing was going great. But then there were days where it just wasn't working. And when you try to force something that isn't working, it's really, really difficult.
When you finished writing the book, Heidi, did you give yourself that moment where you just said, wow, and you were able to even just luxuriate in that moment of having accomplished this?
I actually started sobbing. And my son came into the room and he's like, Mommy, are you okay? And I'm like, these are happy tears.
Yeah.
Like after you give birth or something, you know?
Yeah, totally. I know what you mean. I exactly know what you mean. So can you tell us how October 7th, which I think did change everything. I know it impacted my show.
Oh, did it?
That's absolutely. Very much so, in more ways than I can ever tell you. It was a very, very difficult time. How did it impact your book, your life, you? Can you speak to that?
First of all, I had been good friends with a huge romance author, not Jewish, but we were friends. I won't name her, but she's a pretty big deal author. And after October 7th, I noticed that I wanted her to acknowledge our hurt. And when I messaged her, she just blocked me. And it wasn't just her, but it was other people as well. And bookstores that had previously welcomed me, after I became very pro-Israel on my social media, they wanted nothing to do with me.
It's hurtful when we know everything we know. It's very complicated stuff. Can you speak to the effects of post-October 7th anti-Semitism within the global literary community and how it affects Jewish authors today?
Yeah, absolutely. We have been kicked out of so many spaces for being Zionist. Mm-hmm. So we're no longer, many of us, we're actually told you cannot come to our romance con, which is like a national conference of romance authors. And like I said previously, bookstores that would welcome us and do signings or do panels, we are now being told, sorry, it doesn't work out for us. And even acquisition editors who are Jewish, I've heard them say that they're almost afraid to bring up a Jewish story when it comes to those meetings. I think did a poll recently, and it said globally there was a 46% rise in people's their anti-Semitic sentiments. I mean, that's huge.
I think it's higher than that, actually. And I know the numbers are very high in Canada.
Yeah.
So you're feisty.
Yeah.
You're a redhead.
Yeah.
You don't like being told what to do.
Nope.
And so what has your response? I know part of it is the Jewish Joy-Con, which has a wonderful mission and you're involved with that. How has that helped? And what else is helping you? Because I take it that you're a spunky person who's going to fight back somehow.
I think everybody had a choice. Every author had a choice to make after October 7th. Am I going to speak out or am I going to be silent? There's a couple of us here and we have a chevra. We've got a group and that was so life-changing because like for the first time in my life, I finally found my people, my creative people.
That's awesome.
They're not all, actually none of them are Orthodox, but there's a whole range of them. And we're writers, we're creatives, and we have good hearts.
Are you part of a huge family? How many siblings were in your family?
That's a great question. I'm just one of three. So I've got a brother and a sister and my mother. She just could not get pregnant. She tried so hard. And my sister, she battled with infertility for 5 years. She got married super young, 19. So she had to use IVF, which is why unorthodox love was inspired by all the infertility and what would it be like?
That's what my husband does. My husband is a leading fertility doctor, and he actually does a lot of work also with the Orthodox community. And he's a very benevolent human.
Aww.
Works too hard, but other than that,
he's wonderful. And that's such like a huge thing, especially in the Orthodox Jewish community. At least for me, when I was growing up, we were always told we have to replace the 6 million Jews that were killed. So that was like a huge responsibility. And so isn't that interesting though?
Yeah, absolutely true. Heidi, it's been really lovely having you here. There's a question we ask everyone at the end of the show. Of course, we're going to ask it to you now. What is bliss for Heidi Shertok?
Oh, I love that question. First of all, bliss for me is Shabbat mornings with my friends. We have champagne Shabbat mornings.
Wow.
I love that.
I want to come.
I know. You love it. We're all super fun people. And we go to our friend's house and like, that's our thing. And then otherwise, I just love spending time with my family, even like just in my bed, watching Netflix, going on walks with our psycho doodle.
Fun.
That's bliss for me.
That's so great. What is the best way for people to contact you, connect with you on social media, and of course, to get a copy of your latest book, Match Me If You Can, and get in touch with you?
I think Amazon is always an easy, great way. So that's what I always tell people. I think it is available in the UK bookstores and other places. Amazon is always a great place to get my books. And then you can contact me through my email at heidishertok@gmail.com or check out my website, heidishertok.com.
And on Instagram is one of our main places, Heidi Shertok.
It's always I Heidi Shertok something.
That's really great. I want to tell you that it's been an absolute delight to have you on the show today. It really has. You're a delightful person and you've really written a wonderful book. Congratulations.
Thank you, Judy. It was an honor to be here and I will definitely come back anytime. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We're going to go on a short commercial break and when we come back, we'll be joined by acclaimed author Jean Meltzer. Be right back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We are back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, AM 740. And we're so happy to have back on the program founder and CEO, international best-selling author, love her books, and the queen of Jewish romance, Jean Meltzer. Dubbed the queen of Jewish romance, Jean Meltzer is the international best-selling author of The Matzah Ball, Mr. Perfect on Paper, Kissing Kosher, and Magical Meet Cute, and the recipient of several writing honors, including Amazon Best Romance, Apple Best Book of October, Apple Best Audiobook of the Year, Booklist Top 10 Romances for 2023, a starred review in Kirkus, a starred review in Booklist, and Library Reads. Jean's commitment to uplifting Jewish stories and voices has made her a leading figure in Jewish literary advocacy. She's the founder and CEO of Jewish Joy LLC, the umbrella organization to Jewish women talk about romance books, the Jewish Joy Book Club, the Jewish Joy Box, which is fabulous, and Jewish JoyCon, a groundbreaking three-day event celebrating the best in pop culture, storytelling, and creativity, scheduled for 2027 at the Broward County Convention Center in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. In addition, Jean has served as a judge for the National Jewish Book Awards and is a founding member for the Artists Against Antisemitism. A sought-after speaker and panelist, Jean regularly speaks on topics such as authentic representation, Jewish joy, and writing through adversity. Her work is informed by personal experience, most notably by her decades-long journey with chronic illness and her background in Jewish learning and media. Prior to becoming an author, Jean studied dramatic writing at NYU Tisch and built a successful career in television, earning multiple accolades, including a National Daytime Emmy Award. So fabulous. In 2006, and this is fascinating, Jean left the entertainment industry and moved to Israel to study in rabbinical school, seeking a deeper connection to her faith and identity. Though her studies were eventually cut short due to health issues, the experience profoundly shaped her voice and purpose as a writer. When her father encouraged her to write a book, not just a Jewish one, because no one reads those, she defied that advice and in doing so really helped transform the landscape of Jewish commercial fiction. The Eight Heartbreaks of Hanukkah, released October 21st, 2025, is her fifth book. Jean, welcome back to Finding Your Bliss, longest bio in the history. Great to have you here.
It is so great to be here again, Judy. Thank you for having me and allowing me to spread some Jewish joy.
We appreciate that so much. So, Jean, you are doing very important work, and really that work is very much needed right now. And I know that the mission and the goals of your company, Jewish Joy, is to help bring the Jewish community together, as it were. Can you say more?
Sure. You know, I always like to start this by asking sort of what gives you Jewish joy? Judy, what gives you Jewish joy? If I can turn the corners here and ask you a question.
Well, I guess for me, it's applauding all the beautiful work that Jewish people are doing and giving them a break, giving us a break, because it's a very, very hard time for us at the moment and in the world. And we want to come back to kindness and compassion. This is called Finding Your Bliss. You can't have bliss with anti-Semitism. You can't have joy and happiness when this kind of thing is going on. And I have always been such a proponent of stopping any kind of racism or anything that's unfair to any of the groups out there, any of the minority groups. And it needs to happen for us as well. There are good people that are behind us. There's no question. I have a very dear friend who's one of those people that really wrote something beautiful after October 7th and really stood by us. So joy to me is coming back to a place where there's kindness and acceptance, more Mother Teresa, and less of what this has been lately.
Yeah. And I love that, because as you're talking, I'm thinking about how Judaism emphasizes tikkun olam and fixing the world and repairing the world, and the idea that God created the world imperfect so that we would have a job and a task to do. And what I love about the message of Jewish joy is that there are access points for everybody. So some of us, it's social justice. Some of us, it's art and culture. Some of us, it's making Shabbos dinner. But what we believe at Jewish Joy is that every way you find your way into God and faith is a beautiful and good thing. We support it all. And what we do with Jewish Joy outside of that as a company is that we like to say we build confident Jews while simultaneously supporting the Jewish creative economy. So Jewish Joy was started in the wake of October 7th. It was started at a time where many artists were being marginalized, where there was erasure going on. It was also a time where readers of books didn't feel safe in their communities anymore. So we started Jewish Joy as a way to create the community when people were feeling really isolated. And as the need grew, we saw that it wasn't just something a Facebook group, that we really wanted to like help people financially who are suffering. So we started the Jewish Joy Box to support authors and small businesses. And our mission has just gotten bigger and bigger. And now we are launching Jewish JoyCon in spring of 2027, which will be really a groundbreaking event. The first time Jewish creatives will have a place from all different fields to go for continuing education, networking, mentoring, and also to show off their culture, our art, our beautiful creativity.
That's so awesome. That's so great that you're doing all this. Tell us just quickly about the Jewish Joy Box, because so imagine FabFitFun, but Jewish, and unboxing this fabulous thing. What's involved?
So, you know, I want to start by saying I am a Jew who sort of has always kind of lived on the outskirts of Judaism, believe it or not. I was secular. My father was very religious, but I didn't want anything to do with the Judaism he had growing up. I was very rebellious. And when I went to college, I was determined to throw off the yoke of Judaism. God, you know, they say man plans and God laughs. I was determined. I wasn't going to do anything Jewish with my life. And I was very successful, very young. And I realized that I was living for my goals and not my values. I wasn't happy. And I decided to go back to the only value system I knew, which was Judaism. So I quit my very successful career in television and decided I was going to move to Israel to study and pursue possibly the rabbinate. And that began this journey of finding a Judaism that was not like my father's, that wasn't like this, you know, sit silent. I used to joke Yom Kippur in our house was a marathon of suffering. It was like, who could get there earliest? Who could suffer the longest? Like my dad was very, very machmir, very like to the letter of the law. But I discovered a Judaism that was rich and beautiful and could be experienced. And I went to all these different communities and I did eventually go into the rabbinate. And I tell that story because also as a chronically ill woman, also as a woman who came from a secular background, also as a woman who wound up marrying a military man and moving to Virginia, I've lived in all sorts of situations where the Jewish community wasn't accessible to me, where I had that dos pintala yid, that little spark of Jew, but I didn't know how to access or I would go to the synagogue and not be able to understand what was going on. And so part of my impetus in creating the Jewish Joy Box was to give people that spiritual connection from wherever they are in the world.
Wow.
And so because I know for myself that I needed it. I've needed it when I was sick. I needed it when I didn't have the right synagogue, when I was exploring. I needed something like this that I could have delivered to my house and in the privacy of my home, open it up and connect with my Judaism. Mm-hmm. So it was that impetus with the wanting to move the needle on sales. Jewish small businesses were suffering. Jewish authors were not getting the marketing support they needed from their publishers. So I thought, what a great idea. Let's make a box and send out boxes of joy to, you know, we can put 1 to 3 books in there. We can fill it with products, a theme for every box. We started with a Jupiter Natural box, and we went to a Shabbat box. We've done a People of the Book Boyfriend box, and every box has happy Jewish stories and beautiful Judaica and crafts from sourced from small Jewish businesses. When I started the Jewish Joy box, it felt like a calling of its own, but I didn't know if people would buy it. And I remember sitting at my computer on the day we launched and thinking like, Avraham, if I only sell 12 boxes, I will make 12 boxes. Like literally that was my thought. And I'm so proud to tell you that in a little over a year, we have purchased over 1,200 Jewish books by Jewish authors. Wow. We have hosted over 50 virtual events. We have supported over 24 small Jewish brands and businesses. It's probably 36 by now. And we have no signs of slowing down. We are just building and growing, and we want to just continue creating this amazing infrastructure for Jewish creation.
Congratulations. You know what's so great about this is you're just doing something so beautiful. You're spreading the light and you're doing just a good thing in the world, which is so needed. But I also love how passionate you are about it, that you're so excited and that your eyes light up with animation when you talk about it, which is, you know, a clue that you're really in the right place. And really kudos to you on this. That's absolutely wonderful. I also read that Jewish Joy receives, and this is a new thing, an operational grant from Upstart's Uplift program. You just received this wonderful grant, which I think has never happened before, in February 2026 to support your mission of uplifting Jewish creatives and fighting anti-Semitism in the arts. That's amazing.
It's so funny because when I started this, having come a little bit from the Jewish professional world, I was like, if I go to any institution in Judaism and tell them I want to start a pink box filled with Jewish Joy and romance novels, they are going to laugh me out of the room. This is never going to happen. But I'm also someone who understands the power of mentorship and teachers and people who believe in you. And Upstart is a Jewish social entrepreneur program. Wow. And they work with all sorts of nonprofits, for-profits, but basically Jews who are trying to do innovative and creative things. And I think that's also why, as we're building Jewish JoyCon, the idea of mentorship and networking and making sure people have business leaders to talk to and writing teachers to talk to, it's so important. None of us get anywhere in this life without someone holding out a hand and helping us.
Of course, we all have to help each other. That's a big part of this show, and it's so gratifying and so good for you. That's just incredible. There's also a new exciting secret project that you're putting together and announcing in early April. Can you share a little sneak peek with us about that?
Sure. We are launching what we call a Jewish Joy Hub. This will be almost like a Reddit meets masterclass, but also a talent repository. So it will be a place where any Jewish organization can go and find local artisans, local authors, local musicians. Now we're going to have one central place moderated, a community server where you can find that talent and you can continue supporting Jewish creatives in all forms and ways.
That's your brainchild, and that's incredibly creative and brilliant. That sounds wonderful. As you know, there's a question we always ask our guests at the end of the show, and of course, we're going to ask it to you now. What is bliss these days for Jean Meltzer?
You know, you talked about uplifting people, Judy, at the beginning. What gives you Jewish joy? And the truth is, you are, and then you mentioned how my eyes light up when I speak about this project. And the truth is, that is my bliss. I can't believe the way life has brought me to this point.
Wow.
And I feel, even with chronic illness, I leap from bed in the morning because I know the work is so important. And I just feel tremendously passionate about it. As scary as it is, you know, I like to joke I'm an author turned accidental entrepreneur here, but I know, I believe I can see the matrix, and I feel like what we're going to do is really going to create some lasting change.
Wow.
It's work right now is my bliss. And I know you know that because you work so hard here and supporting authors and supporting community and making people feel good.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. Jean, what is the best way for people to contact you, connect with you on social media, and of course, to get access to all of your beautiful books?
The best way to connect with me, you can shoot me an email, Jean@jewish-joy.com. You can also check out my author webpage, JeanMeltzer.com, jewish-joy.com. You can learn about our book club, our con, our boxes. It'll take you everywhere you need to be. And just be on the lookout. We are not slowing down. We are working very, very hard. Right. And we love to connect with people. So connect with us.
Instagram, one of our main places. What's your handle?
Jean Meltzer.
That's awesome. I want to thank you so much, Jean, for being back on the show. It's really always delightful to have you. You're such a great soul and you're doing such beautiful work in the world. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me anytime.
We're going to go on a short commercial break. When we come back, we'll meet the author of the children's book, A Magical Passover, starring the Tooth Fairy. Her name is Danielle Halpern. We'll be right back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We are back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, AM 740. And we're now joined by journalist, writer, and author Danielle Halpern. Before we meet her, let me tell you a little bit more about her. Danielle Halpern began her journalism career at Canadian Living magazine in the late 90s. And since then, her writing has appeared in numerous publications and received honorable mentions from the Canadian National Magazine Awards. Her portfolio reflects an eclectic mix of interests, including running. Danielle competes in all distances from the 10K at the 2022 Maccabee Games to the Boston and New York marathons last year. Congratulations on that. Originally from Vancouver, Danielle has called Calgary home since 2001, where she lives with her three children. And A Magical Pesach, or A Magical Passover, starring the Tooth Fairy, is Danielle's debut children's picture book. And so congratulations on all of this, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss.
That was a lovely introduction. Thank you, Judy.
You're so welcome. So well deserved. So Danielle, congratulations again on your latest, your first children's book. And it's called A Magical Passover, starring the Tooth Fairy. I just received my copy this morning and I was able to read it live to my very sweet 2.5-year-old grandson, my first grandchild.
Oh, not so tough.
So just before bedtime. And he loved it. And you know the way kids respond very honestly to what they hear. And it was a real winner. And he lets me know when it isn't. So it was. He especially loved the purpley pink sunset as the Tooth Fairy flies in all sparkly with fluttery wings. And I also love how timely your new children's picture book is, with Passover coming in just a few days, which not only tells the story about the Jewish holiday of Passover and Eliyahu, but it's also about the Tooth Fairy and her traditions too. Can you tell us more about your brainchild? And what was that feeling or moment that sparked you to write this beautiful book?
I'm glad your grandson mentioned the purpley pink sunset, because my son Nathan, who started this whole idea, also mentioned that he liked that line as well.
That's so cool. Yeah. I love
so
that.
So a few years ago, we were sitting in the kitchen. The Passover Seder was going to start an hour later in the dining room, and Nathan lost his tooth. And my active imagination went crazy. I thought, that is so wild. The Tooth Fairy is going to come. Eliyahu is going to come. What is that interaction going to look like? So my mind was off already creating the story. My son was dealing with the gap in his mouth. We're in our very own separate worlds doing our own thing. So really, it's based on a true story.
That's awesome. I want to just pause for a second, and I want you to explain Eliyahu to our listeners who may not know. Who is Eliyahu?
Eliyahu is a Jewish prophet, but he's sort of this liminal character that resides in heaven and on earth. And he's a messenger of hope and redemption. And he comes into your home and he's asking the families, are you ready for there to be change in the world? Are you ready to do the work for there to be justice and harmony and peace and no more fighting and moral clarity and kindness?
Mm-hmm. Isn't that wonderful? Mm-hmm. It's also just lovely that you connected, I mean, partly because it really happened for you in real time, but how you connected the Tooth Fairy to Eliyahu, a central figure in the Passover story. But the Tooth Fairy is a very central figure in a lot of children's lives. What made you connect them and how did that come to life?
That's a great question, because originally it was a fun story about these two characters meeting each other. And then every time I went back into the story to write it and edit it, I started thinking more about each of their roles and their purposes. And you can go quite deep. And then I started noticing a lot of similarities. And it was just really cool the more I thought about what their role was in the children's lives and in the family.
It's so great. You know, I read all of these books to my grandson on FaceTime, my very sweet little grandson, and I have to read them on camera and read really quickly and then show the picture for about a minute. So I can't wait to actually do it in real time during Passover when they will all be with us. What do you love about Passover, and what would you like to convey to people who didn't grow up with the holiday? How can they still connect with this message?
For me, what I really love about the Jewish religion is just the coming together of family and friends. I love sitting at a table with my friends and family and having a beautiful meal and talking. Passover is a great holiday because the story is great. I love stories. And I love symbolism. So I love the Seder plate and all the items on the plate that have meaning.
I so get that. Mm-hmm. The illustrations are absolutely glorious. I know there's sort of an interesting thing about these illustrations that I'd love to hear about. Can you tell us how the illustrations all came together?
Yeah, we all are in love with the look of the book. It's so dreamy. And the cool thing is that I had a vision in my head of what I wanted to look like. And who knows what other people had in their head. But for some reason, a magical reason, Rebecca, the publisher, and Chloe, who did a lot of the artwork as well, the editor, all had the same picture in their mind. So what we created really matched our vision. The illustrator created the characters and the backgrounds. And then we also blended it with digital design, so AI. And blending them together just created this amazing illustrated book that we just are so enchanted with.
It's like a jewelry box. And I'm so glad you said that and that you're so transparent about it, because we have to accept AI. AI can help us and can be our friend, right? And and I think in this case, it's a beautiful, glittering example of how you can utilize it to help support your beautiful book, your wonderful words, and your message. I'm wearing sparkle in honor of your beautiful book. Jeannie Becker has been a guest on our show maybe 5 or 6 times. Nice. And I love the testimonial that she writes on the back of your book, which is, "A magical Passover is a wonderful tale for all of us who yearn for more fairy dust in our lives." Has writing this book brought more magic and fairy dust into your life, and how so?
Ooh, I love that. I am so happy with the reception to it. I mean, I know who my friends are, but it's so nice to see everyone cheering for me and supporting it and buying it and just so excited about it. So to me, that really is glitter and magic. Just feeling the love of the community, just really embracing it and wanting it to do well.
That's awesome. You've written for so many publications. I know you went to McGill, which is where my hometown is. I know you're also a huge runner and that running's a big part of your life. You've competed in all distances and recently ran the Boston and New York marathons, as mentioned before. What do you love about running, and how does running inform your work as a writer?
I love being outside. I love the fresh air. I feel like when you go for a run, whether it's 20 minutes or over an hour, you're going on an adventure. Outside, you're seeing animals, you're seeing people going for a walk, you're by the river in Calgary. So you're treating yourself to a little adventure during the day. And I love listening to my music. So yeah, my happy place is fresh air, music, running. And it's also sort of a nice way to clear your head in the middle of the day. If you're sort of stressed or irritated or just feeling a bit restless, I feel that it's a really good reset. And I like to describe it as meditation in motion. I have meditated before, but I feel like it's harder for me to sit still and tune everything out. But I feel like when I'm running, that really clears the cobwebs and gives me a fresh start for the rest of the day.
Awesome. That's so great. That's so well put. Is there a golden nugget in your beautiful book? And it really is. I just want to encourage everyone who celebrates Passover and those who don't even celebrate Passover but love the Tooth Fairy to get this beautiful, playful, imaginative, and delightfully mischievous book called A Magical Passover, starring the Tooth Fairy by Danielle Halpern. Is there a golden nugget in this book, Danielle, that you'd like to impart to children and adults? Because it was, I loved it too, when they are reading this.
I think there's lots in there that people will connect to. I mean, there's the cute friendship between the two characters, the Tooth Fairy and Eliyahu. Maybe you like learning about the tradition of Passover. Maybe you like learning what the Tooth Fairy has to say about her tradition. Maybe you love the message of hope and different cultures embracing each other. I think you pick out of it what you want, really.
Did you always know you were a writer? Were you writing ever since you were a little kid? And when did you first sort of discover the fascination and love for writing?
I really have. My parents gave me a journal when I was really young, and I loved the lock and key. That was really cool, the gold lock. And I just love writing about my day, or, you know, a fight I had with my parents about, I want to watch this on TV and they won't let me. So I really felt like I gravitated to the page. So it's something that I really like to lose myself in.
Do you remember the first piece you got published and how that felt?
I do, actually. And you could actually write the same piece today. It was in the Vancouver Sun or the Vancouver Province. It was a personal column like anyone could write in. And it was about, I was working at Grouse Mountain for a summer job, and a woman came up to me and she said she was from Israel. And I said to her, oh, I'm from Israel. And she said, oh, I'm Palestinian. And we both looked at each other and we weren't sure what we were supposed to do. And then we both extended our hands to each other and shook hands and just said, like, so nice to meet you. And we were so happy that we had this newly found friendship on this side of the world. And we wished that things were different in Israel. And I mean, like I said, unfortunately, you could read that piece today and everything has stayed the same. But I just thought that was a really beautiful moment that we wanted to connect with each other and be friends.
I love that story. I'm so glad you shared that. That's really beautiful. Do you have any tips, Danielle, for aspiring writers who might be listening, who maybe have written, or maybe some who've never written and might be even much older, but want to try their crack at writing the great Canadian novel or something?
I think like anything, you write or talk about what you know and what you feel strongly about and passionately about, because you're going to make it meaningful and personal, and you're really going to connect with it. I think that will show in the writing.
What great advice. What excellent, beautiful, and sparkly advice. What is bliss for Danielle Halpern?
I think bliss is being surrounded by family and friends who love you and support you and are there for you to celebrate the good times, and who are there to support you when you need it in low times. And that, to me, I think is bliss, feeling that love.
And that happens exactly in the setting of this book, A Magical Passover, that happens around the Passover table. And I wish you a very happy Passover in advance.
And
Hag Sameach. And I want to thank you for this. It's really been delightful to
thank
have you
so
on
much,
the show.
Judy.
What's the best way for people to contact you, connect with you, and of course, to get a beautiful copy of your book, A Magical Passover?
I am on Instagram and it's my first name, at Danielle. I do have a website, daniellehalpern.com. The book is at select bookstores in Toronto, Mabel's Fables, Type Books in Thornhill. It will be in Indigo in Calgary. It's on Amazon. And we're just starting out, so we're reaching out to lots of different bookstores throughout the country. So if all goes well, you can find it in many places.
Awesome. I want to congratulate you again. And thank you so much, Danielle. And I want to tell everyone, when you're looking up her name on Instagram, the spelling is Danyael Halpern. And Halpern is Halpern. Each week, we spotlight fabulous people like Heidi Shertog, Jean Meltzer, and Danielle Halpern, who are living their bliss. I'm also on Insight Timer, the number one free meditation app. All you have to do is search up Judy Liebrack. And of course, you can always follow us at The Bliss Minute on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. I would love to thank all of our wonderful guests for being here today, Heidi Shertog, Jean Meltzer, and Danielle Halpern for being on the program. Also, thank you to Meg Ruffman, Siobhan Kiley, producer Chelsea Lockstedt, associate producer Lori Quinn, Eva Shabatai, Olivia Vigiani, audio engineer Juliana Yanisiello, video editor Sierra Brown Rodriguez, audio producer Faz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, the Create Fertility Center. And as well, a big thanks to Garrett Flores for the beautiful pink roses that adorn our set each week. For everyone here, I'm Judy Lee Brack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.